Thank you, Anselm. And of course, thank you to the directorship, to Bernd, and to the entire team of HKV. It's always such a pleasure to be in this house. And I'd like to tell you a few stories. And the first one is, of course, one that is related to me being here. I remember many years ago when I was a curatorial nobody coming to events here and exhibition, dreaming of that moment that I would be able to be invited to do a project in this house. So this house has a kind of a special place in my heart in terms of collaborating and working. And I'm particularly moved tonight to be here to introduce you and share with you a project that has been dear to me for many years. And long before its very first step of research even began. And like every project, there is a story behind it. So you will indulge with me telling you the story behind Saving Bruce Lee. Because it's a story that began, for interestingly enough and funny enough, in New York, when my colleague Kate Fowle had just been appointed director of the Garage Center in Moscow, and we were celebrating her appointment, the beginning of a new chapter of her life, when she suggested that I should definitely think of a project that I should do with her in Moscow. And without hesitating, right then, I told her that I've been having an idea since many years that has been germinating in me, and I would like to find out if she can support it. And the story was exactly, I was interested in finding out why some African filmmakers are called the Russians. And it would be the story to find out how these filmmakers who studied in Russia from the 1960s all the way up to the collapse of the Soviet Union in the early 90s, and how that training influenced the cinematic language. And of course, she had no idea about it, like many people had no idea about this part of exchange and collaboration and education. And so it became quite obvious that this is what we will be doing. But some of you who know me know that I'm notorious in pulling ideas, but not as notorious in making them happen. So it became clear that I was looking for a miracle. And when Kate followed suit with a proper invitation for a preliminary research and proper contract and so on, I was like, oh, here we go. I am not a film curator, but I have a dear friend who is a proper film curator. It's Rasha Salty. She became my miracle. Because without her, this project will not be at all. And before I even continue to talk about the whole premise of the project, I really would like you, all of you, please help me to say a big thank you to Rasha, because without her stamina, without her, how do you call it? In French, you say la hargne. I don't know the word in English. Like, you know, she just keeps hanging in there. This project, we will not be here tonight in introducing this. I really wanted to thank you, Rasha. And it turned out that she had been thinking and also struggling with finding an opportunity to conduct the very same research focused on Arab filmmakers. And this brought us also together because one of our contentious discussion has always been me telling her, forget it, there is no Arab world. There is only Africa. With certain countries with an Arabic background. So I can be nice and indulge in you talking about your Arab world, but you know that more than half of the countries considered Arab world are in Africa anyway. So it became logical to have a Russia common board of this project. And some of you may also ask yourself, how come a project that is geared and that is concentrated on filmmakers from the Arabic-speaking world and from Africa, studying in the USSR, in the Soviet Union, why is the project named after an Asian American hero? And that's the power of cinema at the end of the day, because Saving Bruce Lee owes its very enigmatic title to an anecdote that a friend of ours, the filmmaker from Côte d'Ivoire, Philippe Lacote, had when he presented his film, Ron, at the Cannes Film Festival a few years ago. And Philippe was recounting the moment when, as a teenager, he became fascinated with cinema while watching a Bruce Lee film in a theater in Abidjan. In one of the scenes, Bruce Lee, surrounded by enemies, was vanquishing them one by one, as he usually did. But suddenly, unbeknownst to him, a man creeping out of his sight was waiting for the right moment to attack him. And when he did, a spectator in the audience leaped from his seat with a knife and tore the screen to save him from the attacker. That's the power of cinema. So this anecdote fascinated us for several reasons. One among them is that the panoply of cinematic heroes that populate the cultural imaginaries in the African continent and Arab world, since the middle of the 1970s, Bruce Lee has reigned as an uncontested, beloved, and admired icon. And with his physical prowess and sense of justice, he captivated at once the imaginary of the rich and poor, the upright and the wayward, the powerful and the disenfranchised. Perhaps he was the first global hero. I believe he was the first global hero anyway. The king with the longest rule before Bollywood and combating Hollywood to a certain extent, and overrun the film distribution market. So exploring cinematic imaginaries and the social life of African Arab cinema invariably leads to question of access, distribution, and the exhibition of films, as well as to question of cinematic languages, poetics, means of production, ideological and ideological paradigms. As the birth of a national cinema is directly bound to establishment and independent states, and the institution of sovereign public and private film production entities, we ask whether the crowning of Bruce Lee as a popular hero might incarnate a milestone or a threshold, and whether he dislodged local cinematic heroes or simply occupied an empty seat. In other words, we explored the question of post-coloniality that permeated the first two and sometimes three decades of African and Arab cinema in its different variations, from the perspective of the creation of national icons and sense of peoplehood, writing a national narrative and capturing national landscapes. I was very surprised when we started researching on this project that so few people knew about his history. And it was quite stunning how Anselm was referring to the Cold War earlier, and how the Western imperialism, cultural imperialism, cast a shadow totally, of course, in the competing with Soviet cultural imperialism, cast a shadow on that history. So film histories dedicated to African and Arab worlds have adeptly studied this lineage of filmmakers who were formed in the Cold War's West, tracing influences between teachers and students and how they appear in local cinemas. The pervasive sway of Institut des Hautes Études Cinématographiques in Paris, or, I mean, everybody know about the French cinematographic language and film school and their influences on other filmmakers in Latin America, in Africa also, and in Asia. And of course, the Italian cinematic school is very well known also, and their influences and, you know, how do you say, inspirations. One cinematic language that, from our perspective, is just as powerful and is just as, how can I put it, just as impressive and just as subversive and aesthetically challenging is the Russian film language. That exactly, over three decades of intercultural diplomacy, many filmmakers from Africa and the Arab-speaking world benefited from. And yet still, that history was sort of sidelined, sidetracked, not known, not diffused, disseminated. So during the bipolarism of the Cold War, and for multiple and diverse reasons, the African continent and the Arab world were contested territories for the strategic deployment of influence and allegiance between the two superpowers, of course. So cultural diplomacy represented an important realm in which that contest was manifested, specifically with granting scholarships in higher education and in the creation of specialized professional national elites whose allegiance would be organically bound to either power. Under the aegis of the international socialist friendship, the Soviet Union used channels of diplomacy to host a remarkable number of students at universities in Moscow and other cities. You have to understand that, of course, this project is totally focused on cinema, but the whole enterprise of cultural diplomacy or educational exchange was not limited to film. So you have to imagine that students were coming literally from the entire continent, from the Arab-speaking countries, to study in Moscow and other cities in the Soviet bloc. Basically, everything from sciences to economy, to law, to anything that they would wanted to study. So, but of course, what had the most lasting effect and traceable effect, and that was what is interesting to us as curator, film curator, and contemporary art curator, is those who went to art school and those who went to film schools. So Saving Bruce Lee curatorial concept is based on research around the destinies and the universes of these African and Arab filmmakers who studied at the RIGIC. So given the paucity of primary sources, the impetus for us was to retrace the journeys of several filmmakers by researching and, when possibly, recording their testimonies and recollections, bringing to light elements that help trace tangibly and critically the influence of Soviet masters on the students, and interrogate prevailing scholarship on African and Arab cinema. The project's time span is a historical bracket marked by upheaval in both African, in the both African continent and the Arab world that doesn't exist, beginning with independence and the arduous challenge of decolonization, followed by coup d'etats in the 1970s and the 1980s that were sometimes mirrored in the eruption of violent strife, but almost invariably the tightening of self-proclaimed democracies or republics into autocracies governed by an iron fist which policed freedom of expression, political dissent, and civil liberties. I am very, very happy to be here to introduce one portion of this vast program. And I think Rasha and I struggled so much to bring to a public consumption this project, because we started with an assumption, with an idea, and that's the beauty of research. You go about it assuming certain things that as you go, you realize that those things are absolutely not what you expected them to be or what you imagined them to be. And the project became extremely, it grew. And it grew so big that even Garage could not handle it anymore. And so at some point we were like, do we have to downsize it? Would we have to give it up? How should we deal with this situation? I don't want to call it a conflict, it's just a situation. And I'm rather of the type who says, okay, if these people don't see my greatness, so forget it, you know. Rasha is a bit different, you know, she's more diplomatic and she's more knowledgeable. And she's also the one who has the capacity to customize things. She was the one who was always pushing to say, oh, we can do a chapter here, a chapter there. We can start with this small perspective and bring it further. So I think that it is really what you're seeing today, and this is what I want you to understand, is that it's just one aspect of a very large project that includes in itself a conversation between the experience and practice of filmmakers coming from Africa and the Arab world, studying in the USSR and going back to their countries to develop national film practices. And a conversation also, and this is what is totally, you will not see, you will not miss, but I give you the scope of the project, because during our research, we came across an amazing Russian filmmaker, Sasha Markov, who was doing exactly the same project in reverse, looking at all the Russian filmmakers who were sent to Africa to make films about Africa, and who came back with an aesthetic and vision and you know, stories that really changed them in turn. So that conversation is also part of the whole project. Another component of the whole project is also the contemporary art part of it, in terms of how artists, different artists from various countries of the territory that we deal with, represent or translate the idea of Cosmos, which is the ultra-Russian, obsession. So I think that it is for us really important to see that this small aspect can be shown here, and I hope that it will trigger a lot of conversation. It will trigger that you will learn something that you haven't heard before, and that it will trigger maybe, you know, the possibility to take it further. And before I bore you totally, I know that Rasha told me I have to thank very particularly Gabriel Chomentowski. I think that all projects have angels, and Gabriel was our angel in this research, because it's not easy for an African woman and an African Arab woman to go around Moscow not speaking any Russian, one being extremely charming, the other less, to do research on and have access to archives that even the very idea of researching and going into archives, it's a contentious situation in Russia. So meeting Gabriel helped us tremendously to move forward, to get, for some reason, she had this capacity to access things that we were looking for years and could never get. So really, thank you. I don't see her in the audience. So really, thank you very much, Gabrielle, because I think without you, we wouldn't have the material that we have today. And of course, I cannot thank the filmmakers themselves enough, who with enormous generosity agreed to go back to a time in history that for many of them was not at all very pleasant. And over the course of the weekend, we will get to understand the situation, the universes, and the life in Russia. So without further ado, I think I'll pass the word to Rasha. We will introduce the evening, and I'll be talking to you tomorrow and later. Thank you.